You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Take a walk through your local supermarket or pharmacy, and you'll notice one thing in particular. Vitamins are everywhere. Many are prepackaged as foods and labeled as vitamin enhanced or enriched, and supplements and vitamin pills promise us better health.
We know that we need vitamins, but besides that, what do we really know about them? According to our next guest, we don't really know much about them at all, and that's a problem. She says our faith in vitamins, combined with the philosophy toward nutrition they've enabled, could actually do us harm.
Catherine Price is with us now to sort out vitamin fact and fiction. She's an author and journalist. Her new book is called Vitamania, Our Obsessive Quest for Nutritional Perfection. Catherine, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, the word vitamin gets tossed around a lot to the point where a lot of us aren't exactly sure what a vitamin is compared to all the supplements, and you toss that into the mix as well. So what is a vitamin?
Yeah, that's a great place to start because I personally definitely confused the two terms myself when I started this project. So vitamins are not the same thing as dietary supplements, even though we often use those terms interchangeably. Vitamins technically refers to just 13 dietary chemicals, and that's A, C, D, E, K, and then the 8 B vitamins, which are also called things like thiamine or riboflavin. And those are chemicals that we need in order to prevent specific deficiency conditions, and which we normally have to get from our diet. And that's much different from the larger, much, much larger category of dietary supplements, which is an estimated 85,000 or so products. And those are the products you see when you walk into a vitamin shop or GNC or even your local drugstore where there's a whole aisle of bottles with all sorts of stuff.
Is vitamin deficiency in its various forms typically a problem in the United States, for instance?
Well, in the United States, we're lucky in that we don't have that high, I mean, we have very low rates of real deficiency diseases, so you're not going to find many people with scurvy, for example, which is vitamin C deficiency. Beriberi, a thiamine deficiency, is basically so unfamiliar that most of us don't even know its name. But, you know, there are people in the United States who do have micronutrient deficiencies, including vitamins, so it's not something that we should just forget about and pretend doesn't, or just think that doesn't affect us, because it's always possible to have a vitamin deficiency if your diet is poor.
Well, once vitamins are actually in our body, that we've taken that vitamin pill or that supplement, do we know what happens?
Well, we know some of the purposes of the vitamins, and we also know some of the ways that they work. You know, we know, for example, that vitamin C is essential in order to produce collagen, which is a connective protein that pretty much holds our bodies together. And so if you don't have vitamin C, you can't make collagen. You get the deficiency disease of scurvy, and you basically start to disintegrate from within. It's a horrible disease that thankfully we don't have a problem with. But it's interesting to me that even if we know what deficiency diseases they prevent, there's still a lot that's unknown about the mechanisms. Like, for example, vitamin A is really important in our immune systems, but we don't yet know exactly how that works.
Now, so despite being officially discovered about a century ago, you say that we really don't know all that much about vitamins. How can that be? Why is there still so much left to know?
Well, I think that part of the problem is nutrition is really difficult to study, and there's a lot of interactions between things that make it hard to tease out exactly what's happening. So that would explain why we still don't know the details of some of these reactions in our bodies. But my point with that sentence was more that we, the public, don't know as much as we think that we know. And when I say I mean like us personally, and then what we like to assume nutritional scientists know. Because one of my personal reasons for writing this book is that one day my husband turned to me and he asked me, "What's a vitamin?" Just kind of out of nowhere. I mean, I guess because I write about nutrition. And I opened my mouth to try to answer him, and I realized I actually did not know the answer to that question. And I thought, I can't believe that here I am, I think I was like 34 at that time, and I, you know, took Flintstones as a kid. I ate total cereal. I'm very familiar with the idea of a vitamin, but if you actually pressed me, I couldn't tell you very much about them at all.
Why is that? So when there's this booming industry, people are taking vitamins, thinking that will do them some good, and in some cases, you point out, they do a lot of good, but why is it that we don't have better education about the function of vitamins?
I don't know. I think part of the reason has to do with the word itself. I started getting captivated by the word vitamin, because the word vitamin was only coined in 1911, and it was by this Polish biochemist named Casimir Funk. And he was studying beriberi, which is the thiamine deficiency disease, but he didn't know that at that point. And he basically made this word up without anyone having isolated a vitamin out of food, and with a lot of controversy still going on about the whole concept of nutritional deficiency diseases. And he just took two words, vita, which is the Latin word for life, and amine, which is the chemical form that he thought all these compounds would turn out to be, which they didn't. And he lumped it together, and he called it a vitamine with an E. And it eventually got shortened to vitamin. But it was such a controversial term. Like, the other researchers at the time didn't think it would stick around because it didn't really mean anything. But it did, because it's such a good word. And so to get to your question, I mean, it got picked up by food marketers, and then the public embraced it because it just sounded nice. And I think that part of the reason we don't ask more questions is it just seems so healthy, you know. And if you think about some of the alternatives for what other scientists wanted to call these things, things like food hormones or accessory factors. First of all, I don't think we'd have an obsession with accessory factors, but right. We probably wouldn't just accept that as readily or be attracted to it in the same way that we are vitamins.
Right. So it's got the vita part in the beginning, suggests good health. But so when did the word vitamin itself become to be synonymous with good health?
Well, I think that happened actually pretty early on. I mean, in part because when it was coined, there wasn't, you know, no one had actually isolated a vitamin. But starting in the 1920s, you started to have two things happen. First of all, some of the scientists who were actually studying the vitamins, who really were nutritional chemists at the forefront of discovering these things, they started to write about vitamins in the popular press. So this one guy in particular, Elmer McCollum, from the 20s to 40s, wrote this really popular column in McCall's, in which he was telling housewives all about this new science of vitamins, not really like pointing out how undeveloped this knowledge was, and also making it seem like if you didn't have enough vitamins, you were immediately going to get scurvy or rickets, neither of which were really a problem in the States at the time. So it instilled this kind of sense of fear in the American public about deficiency. And then you also had marketers realize, wow, this is a great term, and you can't taste vitamins, and you can't see them, and at that point you can't measure them. So if we can figure out that our food contains some sort of vitamin activity, we can make some really great marketing claims, and no one can actually fact-check any of them.
And we've got, you know, food that we can eat, which contains the vitamins. On the other hand, we've got this booming industry of vitamins that we can take to, you know, hopefully shore up our deficiencies. But is there a problem with people subbing one out for the other? I guess in this case, subbing the vitamin pill in for the food.
Well, yeah, that's an important question to ask. And again, to clarify, you know, we're talking about the vitamins, like the 13 vitamins, not dietary supplements, which is a whole different subject. I would say in general, I'm personally not that concerned about the difference between synthetic and naturally occurring vitamins, because they mostly act the same, and there actually are cases where the synthetic form is easier for us to absorb than the natural form, for instance, folic acid or vitamin B12. But what I do see as a problem is that, first of all, a lot of times marketers will use the presence of vitamins in a food to make it seem healthy, when if you actually took a step back and looked at the underlying food, it's not really that healthy. I always pick on breakfast cereal for some reason with this, but breakfast cereal being an example. The other thing is that foods that naturally contain vitamins contain thousands of other chemicals that might be beneficial to our health and that we don't really understand, and that are not put back into fortified foods or into vitamin pills. And so if you just eat food, if you get your synthetic vitamins from fortified foods or pills, you're missing out on all this other stuff. And I think that might have long-term effects on our health that we don't understand yet.
But taken by itself, is there anything wrong with adding vitamins along to your complement of daily food nutrition?
Well, I think it depends what level you're doing this at. I mean, if you're taking vitamins at levels that could be replicated in food, then I don't know if that's necessary, because you also could get them from either natural foods or fortified foods, but you're probably not doing too much bad to yourself. But I think that you get into a murkier territory when you start taking real super doses of vitamins, and assuming that it'll either do something good for you or at worst be neutral. Because not only have there been studies done that show that's actually not the case, like high levels of beta carotene over time actually increase the incidence of lung cancer among smokers in a number of studies. But, you know, we just don't know what some of the long-term effects more subtle effects of these constant superdoses might be.
Well, there has been a lot of research about vitamins, and sometimes it seems to seesaw back and forth. Sometimes people say, well, basically, you're taking these vitamins and you're just, you know, peeing it out, frankly, at the end of the day. And others you say, you know, look at vitamin D. This may have a protective benefit against breast cancer, and it's important to get enough of it. So how do we know what the right course of action is here when it comes to taking vitamins?
Well, yeah, the tricky part is it's a case-by-case basis, and there is so much that's unknown. So I would say to keep in mind a few things, that superdoses in general I don't think are a good idea. That's particularly true when you get to the fat-soluble vitamins, which are A, D, E, and K. The reason being they're the ones that dissolve in fat, and they get stored in your body tissues, and you actually don't pee them out as readily as you do the others. I'd say also to just recognize how much is still unknown about vitamins and nutrition overall. And so if you see a new study that comes out and it's saying that vitamin D, I don't know, prevents breast cancer or can make you fly or whatever it is, recognize that that's probably based on preliminary science. It may be true, probably not the flying thing, but, you know, there may well be benefits beyond what we know. But if it's grabbing headlines, then it's probably pretty new, and I wouldn't recommend changing your diet based on that. And then in general, just trying to aim for levels that you could get from food. But, I mean, D is an interesting one in that many people believe we weren't originally supposed to get it from food because it naturally occurs in very few foods. Like fish liver oil is an excellent source. But beyond that, like the D in milk is a synthetic addition. And instead, we actually make it in response to sunlight on your skin. So that's an interesting one where the experts themselves really don't have many answers about D, even to the point of defining what deficiency is, or knowing what it does beyond helping with bone health. So there may well be, you know, there's exciting research going on with D, I guess, and I think that it is difficult to always get enough from our food. So that one is—it's just an interesting, particularly interesting one to me. How to balance those, what we know and what we don't know.
Well, we're talking right now with author and journalist Catherine Price about the wide world of vitamins, what we know about them, and also what we may not know about them, and the effect it could be having on our health.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you make it a point to take vitamins, maybe a multivitamin or some vitamin C? Are you confused by some of the claims surrounding vitamin supplements? So what questions do you have about vitamins in food or pill form? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking with Catherine Price. She's the author of Vitamania, Our Obsessive Quest for Nutritional Perfection. And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the vitamins you take? Why do you take them? And what would help you to be more informed about vitamins in general? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, and you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers now. We've got Randy joining us from Sauk County. Hey, Randy.
Yeah, hi. First of all, I agree with the most everything that your presenter, and I've heard her before. I think it's a wonderful thing that she's done. This is my question. A number of years back, my physician wanted to know exactly if I might have some vitamin deficiencies. So he said, why guess? And I went down to the UW. They drew about 30 vials of blood. I think it was more blood than I'd ever seen. And they sent these things all over wherever there was a lab. And when the reports came back, I was fine on everything, but one or two I was deficient on. As I took those one or two, various health issues related to them were solved. What I don't understand is why make it theory? Why not advise people to get their blood tested?
Interesting point. Thank you, Randy. So I guess we can find out if we're deficient and then just treat what we may be deficient in with a blood test. Is that reasonable?
Well, you know, I'm glad that that worked for you. That's great. I think the reason I don't specifically recommend that is that in a lot of cases, it's actually really difficult to measure the vitamins in our bodies. For example, vitamin A, if you wanted to get a really good sense of how much vitamin A you had, you'd have to get a liver biopsy, which is not really a pleasant-sounding thing, to me at least. And other ones like vitamin C or folic acid, for example, fluctuate a lot, or D for that matter, actually, depending in the case of C, for example, if you just ate like a lot of grapefruit, you're going to be off the charts with vitamin C, but then a week later when you didn't have the grapefruit, you wouldn't be. So it can be difficult to interpret the results. So that's really one of the reasons I don't talk about that too much, but I'm very happy that that worked for you. That's great.
Thank you for that call. And we're going to go next to Sarah and Nina. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, I had a question. I guess in the past when I have taken vitamins, I mean, I took Flintstones when I was a kid. My mom gave them to me, and she always called me the sick child. I got sick all the time. And then in college, I took multivitamins regularly because I wasn't necessarily eating the healthiest at that point in life, being a poor college student. And whenever I got used to it, it's like my body got used to taking the vitamin. And then if I stopped taking it, even for a day, I would get sick. And now that I'm an adult, I don't take any kind of vitamins whatsoever. I just am careful about what I eat, and I exercise regularly, and I rarely get sick anymore. Do you know if there's any sort of connection between the vitamin and how often you have it, and if you can possibly become sick? Can your body get used to it and, you know, need to have it at some point if you take too much of it?
All right. Thank you, Sarah. An interesting question there. Is that what's going on with Sarah, or has she just gotten old enough that she's developed immunity to a whole bunch of viruses?
Well, that's a good question. I guess you could have just gotten sick so many times in your past that now your body has all the antibodies to keep you protected. I mean, I would say that scientifically, I don't think those vitamins are what was doing that for you. There could be a placebo effect, though, where you associated taking the multivitamins with this protective effect on your health, and placebo effects can be very powerful. So I can't really speak to what exactly is happening, although I would say I don't think it's because of the multivitamins.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Sarah. And next, we're going to go to Mary in Heartland. Hi, Mary.
Hi. My ophthalmologist has prescribed eye caps, which when I read the label, there seemed to be very high levels of A, C, E, and zinc. I mean, E was like 1,333%, which I guess is of the daily requirement. I'm really concerned about this. Can you speak to that? I haven't started to take them yet, but...
Okay.
I'm not familiar with that particular product, but I do think it's a good idea when you see products that have amounts in that excess of the recommended dietary allowances for you to ask questions. So I think it's a good idea to ask your doctor a bit more about why they're prescribing that, and to try to do a bit of research on your own about what is actually known about the effects of that in your condition. I don't know of any reason that you need to be taking that much E, and there have been some studies that high levels of E over time are not good. So I think your caution is warranted, and I'd encourage you to try to do some research, for example, with the National Institute of Health website, and also talk to your doctor. But it's okay to be cautious. I think that's a good idea.
Mary, thanks a lot. I hope that helps. And Catherine, let's talk about those daily allowances. Everyone's heard the RDA. You're supposed to get, X percent, from each day in your food or your vitamins. What do we know about how useful those figures are?
Well, it's a good point to make. So the RDA stands for Recommended Dietary Allowances. And we tend to think that they are a target each of us should be trying to hit every day, because it has that 100%. We all know in high school you're supposed to hit 100%. but in reality, they're not meant to be personalized. They're population-wide recommendations, which means they're supposed to try to cover pretty much everyone in the population, 97 to 98% of us. And what that means in practice is that 97 to 98% of us could be totally fine on less, if that makes sense. It's like having an oversized sweater that is going to fit 98% of the population. Chances are you'll fit into a smaller size, but you need to make the recommendation pretty broad. So I'd keep that in mind. It also is not meant to be every day. It's just your average consumption over time. And also, these are based on science that's constantly evolving, so you can't really, it's not a hard and fast thing. And in terms of the numbers on your food and supplement labels, those are actually based on pretty outdated versions of the recommended dietary allowances, mostly from 1968. So take those numbers with a grain of salt. Don't think that if your supplement says it's 100% of everything, that it's A, based on the most recent science, or B, personalized advice for you.
Having looked into vitamins closely and our sort of cultural belief, and we call it an obsession, is there a better way that we can start thinking about nutrition and health and vitamins along with the whole package?
Yeah, I mean, I used the term protective diet when I was trying to figure out a way to think about this in a different sense. And actually, it's interesting. This term, the protective diet, was coined by a nutritional chemist named Elmer McCollum, who's from Wisconsin. So you guys have personal connections to him. And he was the one I was mentioning who wrote a popular column for in McCall's magazine. And he endorsed this idea of a protective diet. And what he meant by that is just eating a foods that naturally contain vitamins, like a lot of leafy greens and fruits and, in his case, a lot of dairy products, as he did a lot of work with dairy. but basically the stuff that you and I have heard forever that we're supposed to be eating. And he said that not because there was like tons of scientific evidence behind it, but because you couldn't really measure vitamins, so you kind of had to just like hedge your bets and eat foods that they knew contained some but didn't really necessarily know the details.
And today we're going to have to leave it there. Catherine, okay. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
We've been speaking with Catherine Price. She's the author of Vitamania, Our Obsessive Quest for Nutritional Perfection.